Well, would you like to get hold of your Bible now and turn in the New Testament to John's Gospel? And Janine is going to read for us this morning. Thank you, Janine.
Gospel is taken from John chapter 2, beginning at verse 13. The Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found those who were selling oxen and sheep and pigeons, and the money changers sitting there. And making a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he told those who sold the pigeons, "Take these things away. Do not make my father's house a house of trade." His disciples remember that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." So the Jews said to him, "What sign do you show us for doing these things?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Jews then said, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking about the temple of his body. When therefore he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thank you, Janine. And now we look forward to hearing Ed. It's good to welcome you to St. James this morning, Ed. Learn a little bit more about hope into action, as well as what the word has to say to us this morning. Thank you.
Great. Well, look, thank you, Peter, and thank you for having me speak at your church. It's a tremendous honour. I'm very, very grateful. Okay, first of all, thank you. It's great to be here. It's great to be here amongst old friends. I worshipped at St. Barnabas with Caroline McCower, believe it or not, at least 25, 30 years ago. Someone's messaged me, went to the same school as me, which is great. Penny and Alan Foster, can I honour you because you have been great supporters of Hope into Action and inspiring couple that have taken some homeless men and women into your house. We really admire that and I've loved working with you. Ian Sinkinson was my former boss and I loved working with him. Believe it or not, I learned an awful lot from him. And still I find myself trying to think, what would Ian say? How would he think in this situation? And Ranjini also is becoming a friend and colleague. And I know she's done a lot to get Hope into Action started, hopefully, in this church. And I know she's anxious that I don't completely mess it up today. So I hope I'll do okay if I can. So listen, thank you. Welcome. I'm going to talk a bit about Hope into Action, which enables churches to house the homeless. I've got two talks. So on this one, I'm just going to start and do a quick introduction to Hope into Action. Then we'll have a video and then a song, I think, and then I'm back on. And then I'll just make 2 points, one of which is connected to the reading today. So I hope that gives you a sense of where we're going. I worked with Ian Sinkinson in Sudan. I'd spent the best part of 10 years in Africa. And when I came back into this place called Peterborough, which, believe it or not, is in Cambridgeshire, though I grew up in Cambridge. I know you're not kind of aware of it, but it is there. And I found myself there and found myself thinking, so, you know, what do Christians do in a town called Peterborough? I was really aware what when you're working, when you have the privilege, as Ian and I did, of working in the field and verses like Isaiah 58, isn't this the kind of fasting I've chosen to loose the chains of injustice, to set the oppressed free? Really gave us a kind of mandate, and it's a real joy to be able to work under those words and outwork them on a kind of practical basis. In Peterborough, I found it a bit more difficult to understand. And then one day I was playing in the park with my daughter, and there's a guy on the bench just next to me, and I got speaking to him and asked him his story. And his story is the same story that you will have heard or seen that happens thousands of times still in this country every year. He left prison that morning. On leaving prison, you get 47 quid, you put it in your back pocket. And by the time I met him at 11 a.m., he was already through a bottle of something pretty strong. So I said to him, well, you know, I'll try and help you. I'll find you somewhere to stay. None would take him. I said, well, what about Norwich? None would take him. I said, well, where were you before you went into prison? He said, before I went into prison, I was in Cambridge. So I said to him, well, why don't you go back to Cambridge? He said, if I go back to Cambridge, I will end up in the same old hostel, doing the same old things, surrounded by the same old people, and so I'll end up back inside in 3 months' time. So I had no option, but I had to leave him there. And as I left him there, three things occurred to me. One, his nowhere to go, his physical poverty, homelessness, was a function of him having no one to go to. Because if I came out of prison tomorrow, I have parents, a wife, brothers, sisters that will take me in. So I have a relational richness that prevents me experiencing the physical poverty of homelessness. Second thing, I felt very disempowered. And then the third thing I thought of was, well, you know, where are all the church? Well, there are loads of churches in Peterborough. Why are none of them giving the homeless a home? And what's the point of all our worship if we don't give the homeless a home? And at that point, I suppose my angst and my prayer about God, what do Christians do in Peterborough, came back into my mind. And I realized that Isaiah 58 says, isn't this the kind of fasting I've chosen to loose the chains of injustice, ... and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? Ah, okay, now it makes sense. I've met the need on the streets here. And as I looked around, as you guys know, there are, you know, hundreds and thousands of homeless men and women in this country. And we're in a context now where a pandemic is coming to an end, we hope. But the pent-up need could cascade into the country. So people are predicting a tsunami of need as you're allowed to evict people, as the furlough scheme ends, as redundancies increase. So there is a real need for the churches to scale up, because the state is not going to get any bigger. The state will shrink. As the state shrinks, the need will go up, and there's a great big gap. And we think that's a great opportunity for the church to step into that gap, to meet holistically the needs of the tenants. Because as great as secular organizations are, we can match them as a church in terms of their excellence, because we want to honor God with all our mind. And we have a relational richness sitting in all of our churches that can meet the underlying cause of homelessness, which is a relational poverty. The first thing God ever said about man is it's not good to be alone. And we can provide a relational richness for our fellow man and woman. And if you don't know, just to give you some context on this, St. James's is very much considering using their old curate's house as a house in partnership with Hope Into Action. And we're exploring that with your PCC now. I think the conversation is going very positively, which is great. So let's hope that goes forward. But I'm just going to very quickly give you a couple of slides now just to pack that out. From that first meeting I had with the guy on the bench, then what happened is my wife and I had an inheritance. We bought a house. We partnered it with my church in Peterborough, and my church agreed to try and love, mentor and befriend that first tenant, who I then went into the prison, found someone who had nowhere to go on release. I met him at the gate. I took him to that house, and my church provided him with a relational richness. The rest is history, as they say. So I hope that's kind of made sense. I'm just going to talk you through a few inevitable PowerPoints that come with these kind of talks, which I hope will help explain Hope Into Action a little bit better. Okay, so this is just, I love this picture because this kind of tries to embody what we are. One of those people there is what we call one of our tenants. She was a recovering alcoholic who is on the streets. And the other one is a befriender from the local church. And I hope that picture shows you a few things. One's a sense of home, a sense of warmth, a sense of safety for our tenants, and also a sense of mutuality between the church, befriender, and our tenant. And that's what we strive for. As we come alongside our tenants, can we strive to do so with a heart of mutuality, meeting them where they're at, and so forth. So Hope Into Action, as you heard, began 11 years ago with that first house I've just explained. We now have 70 churches and 87 homes around the country, operating in 27 towns. If you've heard of, and we have over 200 tenants tonight sleeping in homes supported by churches. And that is good news. And what we hope for is a completely holistic care. Isaiah 58 again said that they are there to, you want to break every yoke So if someone comes to one of our homes with homelessness or addictions or criminality background or poor educational background, our hope is that we can break everything that prevents them from flourishing, including the spiritual poverty and yearning for God that we believe is in all human beings. This is our model that we use for every single house. Some of these houses have men in, some of these houses have women in, some have refugee families in, some have women fleeing domestic violence, but we still use the same model. So if that is our gentleman who is the poor wanderer who's left prison this morning, using investment capital or existing assets, we buy a house. We turn that house into a home by partnering every single house with a church, because there is St. James's, a church can provide what makes a house a home, and that is love, relationships, nurturing, befriending, prayer, all those things the churches do so well. And to ensure quality, we provide what's called an empowerment worker with every single house. And that means that we, Hope Into Action, can concentrate on things like tenancy agreements, house regulations, rent collection, housing benefit, all that stuff that isn't really in, you know, John 2 today. That kind of technical stuff, allowing you, the church, to do what churches do brilliantly, love, prayer, discipleship, and so forth. Over the years, just so you're aware, we've won various awards, a right-wing think tank, Centre for Social Justice, a left-wing newspaper, the NHS, a research institute, a secular organisation like Homeless Link, and the Church of England, and many other, a few others actually, have given us some awards, and I hope that gives you some sort of reassurance. Our aim in all our... all we can do, we realise, is if a tenant comes into our house, we can try to show them love. And we define success for us is whenever the church has shown love to our tenants. When that has happened, we feel we've succeeded. We can't control what people do with our love. I know for a fact Penny and Alan, Penny and Alan have given enormous love to at least two tenants. And that is success. We are really proud of that. The outcomes are actually secondary. But if we get, we believe that if you give someone a safe, secure home and quality relationships, they are more likely to make good decisions with their lives. So if you look at this, 92%, these are our stats that came out last year. I'll let you read them. I can assure you that those stats, if I had more time, I'd explain how they fit in the kind of sector. And I think they are measurable with any organisation I've come across in the sector, as they should be, because we've got the church at the heart of our outreach. We're praying earnestly for our tenants, and so we'd expect them to be good. So I'm going to end there, but the key thing, I guess, I want you just to, the last thing to say is our approach with our tenants, our aim, our desire is to empower them, take control of their lives, and to give them dignity as much as possible. And we do that through a safe, secure home and love. So I hope that's made sense. I will be quiet now, and I think you're going to have a video. And the thing about the video is, one of the things, and I'll pick this up afterwards, we believe is actually, if you approach our tenants with a heart of mutuality, then we actually meet Jesus in the poor. I hope this is an example of that, someone who has been empowered, who's been given dignity. And if we listen to them, they can speak into our lives.
The transformation, the turning around of our circumstances and our behaviour, it wasn't happening. I prayed, I begged, I cried, desperate for God to take away my addictions, to save me from the abuse, to give me somewhere to live. It didn't matter how hard I prayed, I never got a break. There's a charity close to my heart, and one of their slogans is, "Hope doesn't house people, action does." When life has smashed you to pieces and you're at the bottom of the gutter just trying to survive one more hour. When I was there, I didn't have enough left to put a load of action in. I needed help. I needed you to hold my hand, to walk with me down the narrow and hard road of change. I was a homeless heroin addict who prostituted herself every day just to get by. I was dirty. I was a mess. I looked like death, but I didn't need to be converted. Though you may not be able to reconcile the two terms in your mind, I was a Christian heroin addict. I did not need salvation. I needed someone to act with me and to help me put my empty promises of change into action. I did not need to hear about your saviour. I already knew him. I needed someone to hold me up, walk alongside me, and not let go until I had the strength to stand on my own. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for trying to introduce me to God. Thank you for hoping my life would change. But your prayers and hopes alone don't change lives. Action does. People's lives are changed when God's people act. Circumstances are transformed when God's people stand up from their pews, take their prayers and put them into action. I did not crave your prayers, I craved your action.
I hope you found the video challenging, I suppose, because that lady Emily, the number of times I would say God has spoken to me and given me really good theology through Emily is incredible. She's taught me a lot about shame, what is the difference between sin and shame, and how we can make people feel ashamed. She's taught and how we can kind of try and speak and minister into shame. And she's taught me about how, you know, what it's like to feel judged and how many homeless men and women really experience what it's like to be judged. If you want an insightful statement, ask any homeless man or woman, what's it like to be judged? And I'll guarantee you they'll give you a good insight into that question. And really, the reason I put that video up is just to say, at our heart, we want to see our tenants thrive, empowered, dignified, and moving on and so forth. But we strive for the sense of mutuality. Our hope is that if this is the church population, when the church population and the tenants or the homeless population or the disinherited meet, two things happen. One, in the church population, we can trust that God is in us, that Jesus is in us. And that is a wonderful hope. And so as we engage with our tenants, they will meet with God, they will meet with Jesus, whether we say something or not, whether we feel anything or not. And so our outreach is never forced, but it will be spiritual. If they want to explore their faith, they can explore their faith. Roughly 20% of our tenants are engaging in faith activities, Christian faith activities throughout the year. That's good news. But also, Jesus tells us that, you know, he associated himself with the homeless. He had nowhere to lay his head. He said in Matthew 25, when you go and visit the poor, there am I. It's not when you do good things to poor people. It's when you are visiting them, then you will meet with me. And so we can trust that actually, and we can hope that as the our church populations and the homeless population engage, that really is our mission. And as they do engage, we can hope and pray that there is a emotional transaction and a spiritual transaction that occurs. Both sides meet Jesus. Both sides can grow in Jesus. Now, that makes it sound all very exciting and sexy and attractive and all that kind of stuff. But also, I would say that Jesus isn't just the lovey-dovey Jesus. You may meet the hurting Jesus, the bruised Jesus, the shamed Jesus, the rejected Jesus, the Jesus that is abused and carries pain. And sometimes we are called into that area of pain and the challenge that comes with that. It's not always easy volunteering for Hope into Action and journeying with someone on their journey and their recovery out of homelessness with all that entails is a challenge. So we would encourage you, if you wanted to think about, would you want to be a volunteer? Do you feel you could commit some time to befriend and get to know and love and pray for and journey with and meet on a regular basis some of the tenants that might come into this house? This house has already, by the way, been used as a place of refuge more than once, as I understand it. And we'd love it to be used as a place of refuge again. And that's a proposal we've put to the PCC. I think the PCC are warm to the idea, and it needs men and women willing to get out of their pews, perhaps sacrifice some of their time and engage with the homeless men or women that will go into that house. So that's the first point I want to say. And as we do that, as we do it at the heart of mutuality, we can trust and pray that we might meet with Jesus. Jesus actually only said there are three places that you will meet him. One, when you're gathered together in prayer, you will meet him. Two, in communion. And they have become our religious rituals. We meet and we gather and we pray and we break bread. The third place was Matthew 25. when we meet with the poor, we will meet with Jesus. And what we say is that can also become a religious ritual, to meet with Jesus in the poor, to grow in our faith through meeting the poor. So that's the first point. Would you like to do that? If you would, I think probably get in touch with Ranjini, and she would be very interested to hear from you. And the second point I'm trying to link, I've never talked about this second point before, but I'm linking it to the reading that came out today. And it links a bit to money. I think when Jesus spoke about money, he spoke illogically about money. You know, when he said, told the parable about the man who stored up his wealth in barns. He got grains, he built another barn, put more grain in it, built another barn, more grain, Luke 12. We do that in this society. We just don't do it in barns. We put it into a bank account, a savings account, an ISA account, a second home, stocks and shares, or whatever it may be. Those are our barns. Good logical approach to money, except that Jesus said, you are a fool for doing that. Another thing Jesus said is, give and you will be given unto. Really illogical. It's like saying 3 - 1 = 4. That's kind of what Jesus is saying there. So I'd say Jesus isn't logical about money. And he didn't act logically either, as we see in today's passage. The doves and the cattle in the passage, they are just stuff that was traded. And this is what Jesus says to them. He says, how dare you turn my father's house into a market? And what I think is really interesting is, well, I'll just leave that there. And I'm going to show you another slide, and then I'll come back to that point. How dare you turn the church, the stuff that should be going on in church, should not be like a market. Let me just crack on with another slide for you. Because when we started Hope into Action, we started it on a sense that, hang on, the church has so much wealth. And Jesus turned the tables. He sacrificed his name. He got killed as a result of what he was doing. But he was starting a revolution, if you like. And we can create change. Here is Cambridgeshire. We all live in Cambridgeshire. I grew up in Cambridgeshire. I understand a little bit about it. Just have a look at some very simple maths that occurred to me 11 years ago when I started Hope into Action. I'm not including Peterborough in this because, of course, we don't really, you know, Peterborough's a funny place, isn't it? 100 churches in Cambridgeshire. There's actually a lot more than that. Let's say on average, the attendance in these churches is 50. And let's say on average, those 50 people have £5,000 in their savings account. On average, some will have less, some will be in debt. But on average, probably most people have about £5,000 in their savings account. That is £25 million. Of savings in Christians' bank accounts in this county. Let's say there are 100 churches in this county, as you've heard. Let's say the church on average has 50 grand in its reserves. That is a further £5 million sitting around in liquid cash in church bank accounts in this county. I keep going. Let's say there are 100 churches. Let's say 10 people in each church on average own a house. And let's say the average house price is 150,000. Then the assets owned by Christians in this county is £150 million worth of assets. Add all that up and you get £180 million worth of cash or assets owned by churches in this country, in this county, rather. The disciples shared everything they had so that there was no needy amongst them. And if you like, what I find really interesting, I'm going to tell you something I don't normally say. I've been peddling this for 11 years now. And as you've seen, we now have 87 houses, mainly coming from Christians that have shared their wealth with the poor. So I bought the first house, I leased it to Hope into Action, and in so doing, the poor are benefiting from my wealth rather than a bank manager, which would be alternative. And I'm sharing my wealth with the poor. What's really interesting is to date, no Anglican church has opened any of their houses and shared them with the poor. I think that's really interesting. I guess we would like to see that change, wouldn't we? And I think perhaps, so what you are doing or considering is really radical and really unusual. There is another church that's going to do it in London as well. But that will be the first time. And if you like, I don't know why the other churches haven't done it. And I try and not be like Jesus. I try to be polite to people when they say no. and not turn their tables over. But maybe it has something to do with the fact these church houses, which are church, they're spiritual. Maybe people view them as a market and they want to get market rent off them. As Jesus says, how dare you turn my Father's house into a market? Now, I've never said this before in any sermon or talk, but we can change that. We can turn that table, and I'm confident that that will happen. You can't serve God and money. We know that. Jesus said that, right? I'm sure you all know that. God commands us to love our neighbour. We can't love our neighbour with our assets and serve money. And I just want to say, just as much as I can, to encourage you, because I've had negotiations with this PCC and you've been really wise, but really unusual in your radical approach to this asset that you own. And I tip my hat to you. And it's really timely that you are doing this, if I may say so, because a couple of weeks ago, the Archbishop launched this commission and his report. And they're really passionate about churches using their land and their assets to alleviate poverty and crack the homeless and the housing crisis in this country. And when I heard the Archbishop speak, I kind of thought he looked a bit tired. He's trying to inspire churches to do it, but he knows there are 20,000 organizations wrapped up in PCCs and other kind of charities that he has actually no power over. And so all he can do is inspire. And my view is, if this church goes ahead and uses that house to house the homeless in partnership with us, that will really encourage those on the commission, including the Archbishop. And I'd encourage you, and the Bishop of Kensington wrote a book on churches and housing. I'd really encourage you to read it. One of the things he said was this: in order to do this, you need to go through sacrifice, not around it. I'll say that again. In order for us to see change in this country, we need to go through sacrifice, not around it. And he said, it will cause a lot of pain. But let's be clear, there are already huge numbers of people already in pain because of the housing crisis in this country. I found that very, very good to read. I'll say that again. The Bishop of Kensington said, we need to go through sacrifice, not around it. It will cause pain, but let's be clear, there's already lots of people suffering enormous pain in this country because of the housing crisis. So I'd encourage you, if this does move forward and you do partner with us, to be not to be boastful, I don't think this is boastful, but to share the story of what you're doing, because I think it will inspire others around the country to do it. We're in touch with the commission. We can get this story into their kind of, you know, whatever it is, comms. And I don't think that's being boastful. I think that is about, as Jesus said, put your good deeds out there so others will see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. And when John the Baptist came to him feeling a bit low, Jesus replied by sharing the good deeds that he was doing to inspire faith. And I think if this moves ahead with your church, firstly, I'd say, well done. I'm so grateful. And when it's right, be prepared to encourage other churches in telling them what you're doing, because it is rare. It will inspire faith and it will turn the tables on the housing situation. And let's be clear, the church owns a lot of assets in this country. So I hope that's clear. I've never made that point in any talk I've ever done, but it felt relevant given the passage that I was given today. But 2 points, really. I hope you have first of all, I hope you have a sense of what Hope into Action is. And secondly, we believe that churches have rich relationships, social capital, spiritual capital that they can deploy into the homeless. There is a huge need in this country. There is a tsunami of need about to hit this country. And your church is really well placed to meet some of that. For one family, one individual, that's a tremendous output. If you'd like to do that, approach it with a heart of mutuality, desiring to meet Jesus and share Jesus, and get in touch with Ranjini. And again, just thank you for considering sharing your asset with the poor and the homeless, as you've done already, actually. Bless you. Thank you for your time. God bless. And I'm over now.
Thank you very much, Ed. That was most inspiring. It reminds me what Jesus said. And that is, when we give, we're to give good measures, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, because that's how God gives to us. And so when we give to God, we know that he gives back, and he will bless in ways that we don't yet know. So some of you will know that my desire was to have a worship minister living in that house. But I think what God will do is, as we provide a home for someone else, that God will release worship in the church.